Silence!
And welcome to episode 112 of Nerd Pride Radio. 112, the number of pounds in a long hundredweight, or an imperial hundredweight. Because a hundredweight shouldn't actually be 100 pounds. No, actually a hundredweight should be set at exactly 8 stones, and that would make it 112. I don't get it. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones, and I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's probably like 7 other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my head anymore. Our sponsor this week, Booster Gold International. Speaking of which, all right, you guys know Booster Gold? Booster Gold and Blue Beetle? Okay. DC Heroes, a lot of comic relief, but anyway, Booster Gold is a dude from the future who comes back and uses his future knowledge to set himself up as a hero, and he's basically in it for money and fame, but he's also still a hero. And then Blue Beetle is kind of your low-rent version of Batman, same kind of concept but without the dead parents, and the two of them have teamed up and been a partnership in DC Comics. Anyway, so having learned that, you then find out that Nathan Fillion was asked recently in an interview, hey, if you could be any hero you wanted, you know, with all these superhero movies coming out, if you could be any hero you wanted, who would you want to be? And he listed a couple options, but he said, you know, I'd really like to play Booster Gold, which A, the fact that Nathan Fillion knows who Booster Gold is, awesome, and B, the idea that he'd like to play it, I mean, seriously, he wouldn't even have to adapt Captain Hammer that much. I mean, it's pretty much the same kind of character, the same kind of attitude. That would be really cool. All right, so Nathan Fillion as Booster Gold, awesome idea for a movie. All right, but then someone then goes to Alan Tudyk and in an interview with him says, hey, Nathan Fillion says he'd really like to play Booster Gold. If he actually got a movie deal to play Booster Gold, would you even consider playing Blue Beetle next to him? And Alan Tudyk said, well, I have no idea who that is, but if Nathan's in, yeah, of course I'd do it. That sounds like fun. I'm like, wow, that would be an awesome pairing, because the two of them would actually do really, really well at that. And of course, this is all cloud talk. I mean, yes, there's a Booster Gold Blue Beetle project in the works, but in this age of superhero movies, there's a project for everything in the works. It doesn't really mean much. But God, wouldn't that be cool if that was made a reality? That would be awesome. But enough of that. Before we get to the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, we're going to start off with a little feedback. That's right. In response to last episode, in which my son joined me for a while, Aiden, he was on, he did some movie reviews, we talked, he flipped me crap like he usually does. And in response to that, Sarah Beth sent some feedback directly to him. I haven't shared this with him yet. I'll have to. But Aiden, steampunk equals sci-fi or fantasy genre where the Victorian era is merged with clockwork technology, steam power, sometimes with a magic system. Cyberpunk is a future era with cybernetics in a usually post-apocalyptic world, sometimes with a magic system. Not the same thing at all. So here's your feedback. And you, as Mike said, don't know what you're talking about. See, I told you, dude. And then also, she gave him some further correction and told him to stop flipping me crap so much. Kyle, on the other hand, responded after that and said, Aiden, you are so wrong about steampunk. Yeah, see, dude, you were really wrong about the steampunk stuff. Anyway, Kyle goes on to say, sorry, dude. Other than that, though, I think you're a great addition to the show. Just keep doing what you're doing, including giving your dad shit. It's awesome. So yes, he's wrong about the definition of steampunk, and I told him he was. But we've got mixed opinion on whether or not he should keep flipping me crap. Personally, I enjoy it. It's a gimmick. It's a thing that we do, and it's fun. But anyway, Akiva then follows up both of those and says, I have a complaint. I got to put on my Akiva voice. I have a complaint. I pay good, hard-earned American money for this podcast, and I do so because I want to hear from Mr. Mike Jones. So you need to cut out all this guest host nonsense or refund my money. Good day to you, sir. All right, that's Akiva. I have not spoken to him directly, but I'm pretty sure that's exactly what he sounds like. Again, in general, feedback about Aiden and my other kids being on the show, and my wife for that matter, is all generally pretty positive, and I will continue to bring them on, you know, as it works out for them. Right now, my wife is busy working because she's a teacher and she's constantly doing something to get prepared. And my kids all went off to go see their older brother off at college. He just finished building his new gaming computer, and he was excited to show it off. So they all traveled to go see him, and that's where they're hanging out tonight. So it's just going to be me, unless Lisa decides to look up from her work later. We'll find out. Anyway, let's see. Well, I don't know what that means. However, I don't know what any of that means at all. I after the feedback, I then had notes to myself that said, but don't forget I try, it's difficult, Reddit. The hell does that mean? I don't even know why I put notes to myself if I can't interpret them. Oh well, doesn't matter, because now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, I add it to my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod, and the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, straight into the master list. First up, it's my gaming table. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. Role-playing games, video games, card games, role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, I forgot I added that in, any games. If it fits on my gaming table, I'm here to share it with you. And nothing huge right this moment, but we did play some of our regular Pathfinder game on Thursday night, and it was pretty awesome. We're fighting Ogrekin, and they are disgusting backwards hillbillies, and it, again, I mentioned atmospherics in the last couple sessions that we played, and it continues with this one. These ogres are disgusting, and their entire environment, their house, their lands, everything is described in such lovingly disgusting horror movie style detail that it is, a couple of us literally couldn't get our characters to go walk into the room because it was that nauseating. I mean, we're doing this over a computer, just, you know, reading a description that our game master, Pat, who is awesome, types up for us. And based on that, we're like, no, I cannot, no. I will hang back here until someone gets another door open because I am not going in there. Just not. It's just fun. We're having a lot of fun with that. And, I'm also still playing my brother's game online. I told you we were doing a bulletin board role play about an office, about cubicle life, and I thought this was going to turn into, like, The Office. And it turns out that, no, it's a horror movie, and it's a bad one. And by bad, I mean good. I mean, like, I'm freaked out as a character, and I kind of bailed on him for a few days, and I felt bad about that. But I'm back in now, and it's going really well, and it's a really good game, so that's exciting. And did I mention that Jacob's going to start game mastering? And he wants to kind of get his family in on it as his first game mastering experience. He wants all of us there, and that way he can practice on us. We are really looking forward to it. The kids are actually having a really good time plotting this. And did I tell you, Lisa might play? We might actually get her in. Every game we've organized, she always says, oh, I might get in on that. And then she never quite does. I think this time she's actually going to play. I'm excited. So just as we're lining up our characters, we are a typical bunch of Dungeons & Dragons Pathfinder newbies here. It is everybody's getting in on character creation, and we're just going with the weirdest off-the-wall stuff that we can get. So, the characters that are lined up so far, a Sylph Rogue, who only has one eye, an Azimar Ranger, who is an unbelievably flamboyant, obnoxious asshole, a Dampir half-vampire, Dampir Shaman, who is a healer, even though he's a Dampir, so he can't heal himself. A gnomish barbarian who has a Napoleonic complex and is really, really sensitive about his height. A dwarven bard, a drow druid, a human warrior, who he's going to be actually very specialized. But anyway, just crazy. It's a weird mix, and it's one of those where you get all the characters lined up and go, okay, there's really no good backstory that puts all these people in the same room together. No way. And yet, yeah, we'll do it, and we won't worry about that first part, and we will have a great time doing it. So, like I say, it's just, every weird little thing we could come up with. And Jacob, of course, encourages all of that because he needs to sample all of the rules. He needs to be hit with weird stuff in his first game, and he wants this. So I'm really looking forward to it. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know where we're starting, where it's going. Don't care. We're going to have an awesome time. Is there anything else on my gaming table? I don't think so. So that means it's time for a Nerd Culture Report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you are very, very close. This is actually about the new Cub Scout requirements. Yeah, every few years, every 10 years maybe, they change up the Scout requirements. They change the handbook and how the badges work and what kids are working for and how they earn their ranks and all of this stuff. And so here it is. Noah is a Weeblo now, which means he's in the last couple years of Cub Scouting. All my other kids have moved on. And so he's my last one, and they changed the book. And I'm like, oh, come on, one more year. I would have already had him started on the old Weeblo program, and then I could finish him out on the exact same book and program I've been using since Jacob was little, and I wouldn't have to learn something new. But no, do I get that? No. So now I have to go through and learn this whole thing. And it turns out I really like it. It's really interesting. I didn't think I was gonna, because again, I have to learn new things. You know how I hate learning. But they have things in it like, in addition to before, they've always had, you know, knife safety and fire safety and all these basics of, you know, you have to go through all these safety requirements for camping and whatnot before you go out. Well, now they've also included their cyber chip, which is their equivalent for, online safety. And it's actually some pretty good information. They're updating a little bit. There are now, for the optional achievements that they can earn on their way towards their Weeblos badge, they've expanded out the music and arts so that there are more options for them. Game design, that was the one that really got me, is, I don't know why that just beeped. Oh, well. But there's an achievement for game design. Like, literally, I get the kids together, I get them a bunch of materials, give them some ideas, and I go, okay, you need to design your own game. It can be any game you want. Is it some sort of outdoor sport? Is it a board game? Is it a dice game? Is it anything? You just design what you want, and then you teach us how to play it, and we'll try a couple rounds. And that's it. And then they get their achievement. And, I mean, for Noah, God, this is right up his alley. He's been doing this since he was little. And so they did, and they had a great time, and we played a bunch of different games, and they were really good at it. I was really surprised. I mean, so, you know, most of it came out kind of incomplete, and as you play it, you learn that, oh yeah, should have accounted for that. But that's actually part of the whole design process, is learning and playtesting and figuring out what you need to shore up and that sort of stuff. It was really, really cool. And what was the other one that we're going to be doing? In addition to game design, there was, now I'm completely drawing a blank. I just had it, and it's gone. No, wait, I remember what it was. It was movie making. They have an achievement for movie making in there. Well, Noah's already doing that. I mean, he does it for Dr. Noah, which, by the way, had a glitch with the editing software I use. It doesn't work. I've reconditioned my machine, and so I've been looking for new video editing software so we can get this worked out. Should be coming up in the next week, I'm hoping. Anyway, sorry to tease it and then leave you guys hanging. But anyway, the content, it's got to be Scout-related, so he has to, but he can do movie making. This is awesome. So, again, I like that. I mean, hate that they reworked it because, come on, I knew the old system. I already had notes for that. I already had projects we could work on. I could have gotten through that easy. Now I have to learn new stuff, draw up new meeting plans and all that stuff. But at least the content is cooler. I enjoy that. So, and it's more flexible, with more range of stuff that can fit a wider range of kids. So I like it. I'm actually really happy with the Scouts for having done this. There you go.
And now for something completely different.
That's right. Now for something completely different. It's just stuff I don't have a category for yet. And what I want to talk about is depression. And I bring it up because, and now suddenly I'm looking at my notes here on it, and it doesn't feel as urgent to talk about it because I'm feeling really good right now. But I don't know if it showed up in the podcast. I have no idea if you guys know this, but for about the last 3 weeks, I have just been down. I have just been really, really down. Just overwhelmed by everything. There's just been all sorts of stuff that, and mostly that's it. It's being overwhelmed. It's knowing that I have more stuff to do than I have time to get it done in, and just feeling like I'm never accomplishing anything, and So therefore, you know, my reaction to being overwhelmed and not having enough time to do anything is to just not do anything. And then I sit around and things pile up even more and it gets even worse. And I don't want to make this sound more drastic than it is. I mean, this is just a situational thing that I was just, you know, it comes and goes. You know, you wind up having stuff come up, and it's normal to have ups and downs in life. And so it's normal to occasionally be down. It's normal to occasionally be up. This is not in any way to be compared to people who suffer from real, you know, chronic depression, where it is a chemical issue that you really can't get over it. That I mean, really drags them down and keeps them there for, you know, months, years at a time. I'm not anything like that. But I don't know. So I don't know. It's just because I, on the podcast at least, I present this picture of me as this force of unrelenting positivity a lot of times, until I nerd rage, obviously. And so it made me wonder that, you know, now that I've kind of sorted that, now things, I'm feeling a lot better. But I'm like, you know what, is this something I should have shared with you guys as I was going along? Should I have let you know that, you know, not doing that great, I'm just a little down, things aren't working out? Should I have shared? And then I realized that, no, you know what, I don't even realize that it's going on. I usually have to have my wife point it out to me before I finally figure out that, oh, that's what's going on. I think I'm depressed. Oh, I get it now. Right. No, that was the whole point. My wife's over there just staring at me. Is that, yeah, because like 2 weeks into this, I know that, oh, yeah, I'm a little worried about this. I'm a little worried about that. You know, there's these things that have to get done, and I know that I'm upset about them and wanting to get them done, but I don't realize how much it's affecting me until finally Lisa sits me down and goes, "You are not yourself. What is going on?" And then after she brings it up, every time my response is, I don't know. I feel fine. I don't know what you're talking about. And then give me a couple days, and I go, you know what? You're right. I think I might be depressed. I think I might be a little bit worried. I'm a little overwhelmed. And then she says, well, how can I help you? And then she helps me, and we get through stuff, and then we're all fine. But man, it takes me a while to put that stuff together. I don't know. Oh, I don't know if it's, I'm that oblivious to my own internal state. I don't know if it's, I'm in denial. I don't know. I don't know what's going on, but ultimately, look, she helped with some of the stuff I was worried about. We got some things done, and now, you know, once I started getting things done, I mean, again, because this is not a chronic clinical depression. This was a situational thing, and so once I started getting stuff done, oh, now I've got this momentum, and oh, God, not only am I getting stuff done, but oh, look, I'm finally eating healthy for the first time in months and months, because I've been putting on so much weight and I've gotten huge and fat as part of not feeling well about myself last month. And so, you know, I'm getting stuff done and I'm feeling good. And anyway, it's just, I don't know. I don't have a point, as so often is the case with stuff that I bring up. I don't have a point. I just want to share. I just want to tell you where I've been coming from the last few weeks. And every week, as a result of that, as a result of my generally just kind of worrying about stuff and not feeling good about what I'm not accomplishing, I've been putting out the podcast every week, but every week I get done with it. And as soon as I'm done with the podcast, immediately, God, that was the worst podcast I've ever done. Absolutely the worst. In fact, last week's, when I got done with it, I felt so bad about it that it was like, you know what, I'm not even going to put this one out. I think I may just scrap it and just tell them that I'm, you know what, 111 is just going to be redone next week because I can't put that out. And then I put it out anyway because I have to. And I listen to it and I go, oh, you know what, that wasn't a bad episode. That turned out pretty well. So, you know, again, not a real point. Just, I don't know, I'm sharing with you guys. Maybe I have more to go with this later on. But if it happens again, again, I probably won't tell you because I won't recognize it at all. But maybe if Lisa points it out to me, I'll bring it up. We'll see. See, that's why you should be on the podcast more often, is so that you can tell them these things. They need to know this. Nah, she's not going to do it. Okay, what comes after something completely different? Oh, you know what? It's time for another Nerd Culture Report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
Yeah, we get it, Gonzo. No, you're still wrong. This one is representative cartoons. Cartoons intended mostly for children that are showing more representation in terms of race, religion, gender identity, sexuality, And it is interesting to watch. I mean, look, Nickelodeon did it with Legend of Korra, where we find out in the very final episode of Legend of Korra that, oh, yeah, spoilers, by the way. All of these are spoilers. So if you haven't watched any of these particular cartoons, you may want to skip ahead a little bit. But we find out in the very last episode of Legend of Korra that, she and the other woman are in a romantic relationship together. Oh, all right, that's cool. And they only did it, it's a kid's cartoon, so they only did it by showing them walking off together holding hands. That was as far as it went. But then I just found out, and I haven't actually seen these episodes, but apparently in Adventure Time, which Adventure Time has always been pretty fluid about stuff anyway, the ambiguous nature of BMO, for example, they've done the gender bending episodes where they reverse gender roles for everybody. But I just found out, and again, I haven't seen the episodes, but I've just found out that apparently, there is, some sort of, attraction connection between Princess Bubblegum and Marceline. Really? Had no idea. And now I'm watching Steven Universe. And Steven Universe, I'm not even going to give anything away, but Steven Universe is groundbreaking and amazing for a kid's cartoon. And it is, you watch, you know, they're short episodes, they're 12-minute episodes designed to be, a quarter hour. And they are dumb kid's cartoons. It is very simplistic stuff. It is not, there's nothing overly complicated about Steven Universe. It is a really dumb kids cartoon, except that it's put in a context of Steven Universe is living where his mom has passed away. His dad's kind of a flake, but he's there. But he's living with three women who used to be part of the same team as his mom, and so he has these three very strong female role models that he's looking up to, and he states that when he grows up, he wants to be a strong woman just like they are. And not in any, the hints is that it's not any kind of gay thing. It's not but the gender roles within Steven Universe are fluid and interesting. And it's just, it's cool to see. I mean, they've been doing some of this in comic books for a while, and there are some very progressive comic books out there. Bravest Warriors, does stuff, which I didn't even know Bravest Warrior was a comic book. I've just been sitting here waiting for the next episode of the YouTube series to come out. Apparently there's a whole comic book I could have been reading this whole time. Lumberjanes, there's stuff out there. But it makes me think about, that one of the most important things that we can do when it comes to acceptance of people I guess when it comes to promoting understanding and acceptance, I think our best tools for that really is representation. I mean, just being able to show, especially to young people, to show a diversity of situations and characters in our fictional media, and putting characters of all types in all sorts of roles, making them really representative. And so not just having, for example, I mean, how long, and we're still doing this now, that with how often do we have the token black guy or the token gay guy that you have, it's always the central character is still always a white male. And when it comes to having, a diverse array of characters, well, they're all around there in supporting roles to help promote support the main white guy. That's really what it winds up being. And so what we need more of is to see people of diverse experiences, colors, religions, orientations, etc., in primary roles, being the stars, being people with agency who actually do things that make a difference to the plot. And we need to see that all over. And also, and there's a second part to that, also making sure that when we have that diversity, that we also have that same diversity behind the scenes. It doesn't mean that a white guy can't write for black characters or female characters or transgender characters. They certainly can. But in your creative teams behind the scenes, make sure that that same diversity is represented in some way, so that you have someone creative at the table who understands that experience, has lived that experience, and can speak to it, so that we get more genuine representations coming forward. And as I'm looking at this stuff, because to me, seeing that sort of diversity and that sort of representation going on, that's what's going to make the difference down the road. I mean, yes, we also have to, you know, people have to fight for equal rights and people have to promote fairness and equality and all sorts of stuff. But ultimately, the biggest change we're going to make is making people understand from an early age that, you know what, this is normal. There's nothing wrong with this. There's nothing bad about this. That, you know what, people come in all shapes and sizes and flavors, and there's nothing wrong with that. And so ultimately, you know, just like we've gotten to the point now where, you know, racism is on its way out the door. And not that racism is done with, but the idea that at least we've reached to a point where everyone in society understands that racism is wrong and is working to overcome it. All right. Racism is still a huge problem, but at least we're making progress. At least while things aren't perfect, things are way better than they were when Martin Luther King was marching. We've made steps and we will continue to make steps. When it comes to gay rights, we're on the same sort of path. They're further behind than racial minorities, obviously, but we're getting there. We're on the right path. So, and the best thing we can do moving forward is showing that representation, making it normal, so that 20 years from now, this new generation that has grown up seeing these things in media, in their comic books, their cartoons, their movies, their books, their everything, they will grow up not knowing what the big deal is supposed to be about it. And again, you know, in this right now, this particular moment in history when racial tensions are actually kind of at a peak for the last few decades, things are kind of coming to a head and bubbling up that we're exposing some long-held tensions and unfairnesses and things that mainstream culture, mainstream media didn't even recognize were there. And all of that is coming to light. So right now, yeah, things seem like they're getting a little bit worse. But I think all of this is good in that it's exposing what's out there. It's making people think about it. It's making people talk about it. And there's a lot of pushback on that. And I'm not here to discuss, you know, racial tensions and stuff like, well, I guess I am, sorta. Anyway, that's beside the point. The point I was making is that I find this new crop of cartoons, specifically, to be really, really fascinating and a really good thing. And I hope that we see more of that. And I hope we continue to make progress. Well, and actually, you know, eternal optimist, I'm sure we will make progress. We've, you know, there's always ups and downs, but we've been making continual social progress for the last how many centuries, and it's going to keep getting better. It really is. And I think this is part of that. So anyway, on to, what do I got? You know what? I'm not going to do the unnamed history segment today. It's too much. But I will do Roku. Yeah, Roku is the box I use to watch all my streaming stuff since I don't have cable TV anymore. And in addition to Steven Universe, which I'm watching on Hulu right now, I also just from Amazon got Ran, because Humongous asked me to watch Ran. That was the deal. He watched Blood Car. And I watched Ran, eventually. It took me months, but I got around to it. This is Kurosawa's 1985 samurai retelling of King Lear, classic movie. And I watched it, and I think Humongous got the better end of the deal out of this. You know what, Humongous? I gave you Blood Car. I gave you Blood Car, and you give me this? I am disappointed. You know what, maybe, but am I not culturally advanced enough? Maybe I just don't get it, but I just did not enjoy it. When I watched Yojimbo, or tried to watch Yojimbo a while back, this was what brought the whole thing up. I watched Yojimbo, and it was just too cartoonish for me. I could not watch it, and so I kind of set Kurosawa aside, and Humongous said, no, dude, you have to try another one. You have to. And so he suggested Ran, and now I've watched it, and it's like, no, it's still too, I don't know. It's still a little cartoony. It's very clearly, and I know it's adapted from Shakespeare, it's adapted from King Lear, but it's too much of a stage play. The whole thing came off as kabuki theater. It came off as wanting to be a stage play. It was too talky and too, there were some really brilliant parts of it. There was some of those shots, some of the cinematography that was really, really good. And I liked some of the characters a lot. But overall, it was 3 hours. 3 hours, and I am way too shallow to do that much reading for 3 hours. And I don't know. It just didn't do it for me. So again, I know it's a classic, and I know Kurosawa is beloved, but it just did not work for me. So I'm sorry. I tried really hard, and I would tell you maybe I'll watch another one, but I'm pretty sure I won't because I just can't do it. Although what's the Fortress one? Hidden Fortress, is that the name of the movie? The one that supposedly Star Wars borrows extremely heavily from. That one intrigues me, but I'm still probably not going to watch it. Oh, and also on Roku, I'm watching iZombie, which I'm only four episodes in on iZombie, but it's cute and I enjoy it, and I like where it's going, but I find it interesting because it's moving into the romanticization, it's working to make zombies cool. It's working, and not as in zombies are cool as in zombie movies and the traditional view of zombies we've seen. No, this is making the main character is a zombie. The main character is having to deal with the whole zombieism thing. And much like Warm Bodies was the first step in this, and I really enjoyed Warm Bodies. That was the zombie love story where the zombie gets enough awareness to realize that he's falling for this girl and slowly starts to grow and develop from there and eventually regains a sense of his humanity. And that was Warm Bodies. Well, iZombie has taken a step further, and we've got a fully self-aware zombie, and they basically rework zombieism to explain how the typical shambling zombie comes about and how, when you're first infected, you are fully cognizant. You don't lose your mind. It's only if you don't eat for long enough and then your faculties start to fail you and you start losing your mind more and more. But anyway, they've taken it and they've made her kick ass. They've made her a really cool hero in much the same way that Bram Stoker took vampires of myth and made them into something cool. Because this is the thing, is before Bram Stoker, before Dracula, vampires were essentially zombies. It was the same kind of mindless, shambling, undead horror that comes around to feast upon the living. And in vampires' cases, it was typically flesh, or typically blood, but it could be flesh, blood. With zombies, stereotypically it's brains, but it could also just be eating flesh or whatever. In iZombie, it's specifically brains. But vampires were originally just mindless horrors in the night until Bram Stoker took them and mixed them with the Vlad the Impaler myth and with other legends and made it into something greater than your traditional vampire, made it into this very romantic concept of Dracula, which has then, and Dracula, though, went from, you know, while he was romantic and powerful and cool and did all these kick-ass things, he was still the villain at that point. But eventually, you know, vampires got all the way to the point where, you know, we moved into Interview with a Vampire and we moved to the Twilight books. I mean, where we've gone, I mean, they're just full-on good guys at this point. I'm seeing the same transition with zombies, that zombies start off as our shambling horrors, and now we've started to see some, you know, first forays into trying to make them cool, trying to find some explanation that makes them into not horrible, evil, shambling monsters. And I just find it really interesting to watch iZombie for that. And again, it's not just taking zombies down the same path as vampires, although there's a lot of similarities, but it's just a cool take on it. So if you haven't watched iZombie, yeah, try it out. I mean, you know, it's on Netflix streaming. It's not like, assuming you have Netflix, it's not like it's costing you anything extra. So you should give it a watch. But I didn't mean to go off on that diversion. Sorry about that. That's it for the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. That brings us straight to the Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that's where you come in. If you want to hear me haver on about something, you send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. I will add it to my Podomatic list, because Podomatic is about whatever you want it to be. And first up is the number 20, which is, it's from my brother Kyle. Kyle says, hey man, I just heard there's a new TV show by Penn and Teller on TV called Fool Us, or something like that. Have you seen it? What do you know? Should I watch it? You asked this question a long time ago because I don't think it's on TV anymore, and I heard it was really good. I never watched it. I love Penn and Teller. You know I love Penn and Teller. I think they're very smart, very clever, and very, very entertaining. And I remember hearing about the show. I think I heard about it from Yancey. Can't remember. And he really, really liked it. And what I heard about it was that, yeah, I would enjoy watching that. But I don't know anything about it other than that. And again, this question was clearly written a long time ago because I think it's already off the air. I don't know. Hold on. Let me go look. Oh, wow. All right. Apparently it's been around for longer than I thought. The show is Penn and Teller doing a reality show style competition for magicians where the magicians perform, and then Penn and Teller try and figure out how they did the trick. And if they can't figure out how you did the trick, then that's points in your favor. I don't know the scoring. I haven't watched it. But apparently the thing's been around for a while. It was on ITV, whatever that is, and then it was canceled even though the viewership wasn't bad, and then they got picked up by the CW, and apparently the CW has just renewed it for a third season on their network, which will air in 2016. So the show's still around, and apparently it's not so bad, but I haven't seen it. So there you go. 78. This one's from my son Elijah. And Elijah says, Dad, how do we get things close to 0 degrees Kelvin? I don't know. Big refrigerators? Lasers? Laser refrigerators. That's my best guess. Hold on, I'll go look it up. Oh, I am a winner. Laser refrigerators, that's how they do it. From a source no less authoritative than Scientific American, I find out that that they actually do it with laser cooling. I'm not joking. They and I still don't understand even 2% of what this article said. But apparently they can fire lasers onto a set of atoms, and then the laser light is then scattered. And when it's scattered, it's scattered in a slightly different wavelength, and therefore it has to take energy with it. And I don't understand, but as it takes energy away from the atoms, it cools them. And again, that still makes no sense to me because I'm firing a laser at it. Shouldn't I just heat it up and melt it? I've seen Star Trek. I know how these things work. And yet, laser cooling is how they do it. And using laser cooling, they have managed to get stuff down to less than 1/1,000,000th of a degree Kelvin. So within 1/1,000,000th of a degree of absolute zero, which to me seems really, really cold. And then the follow-up question would be, and he didn't actually write this down, but it's the question that always comes up is, well, what happens when you get to absolute zero? And at that point, I have no idea, because I think absolute zero would be a violation of the uncertainty principle, because if you've removed all energy from a system, then you now have stopped all motion within it. I mean, can you do that? I don't even know if it's achievable at all. And if you did, then wouldn't you then be able to tell the exact location and the exact velocity of the pieces inside? Because, well, they're not moving. In which case, again, you violated the uncertainty principle, which you can't do. So I don't know. I assume that if you reach absolute zero, you'll tear a hole into another dimension. That's the only thing I can come up with. 62 is from somebody else. Ronster. No, not Ronster. Sorry, Ronster, you were 61. Oh, so close. It's from Lisa. Lisa says, what is your favorite Disney/Pixar movie? Oh, that is so tough because they are all really, really good. I am still extremely fond of Beauty and the Beast. I love Beauty and the Beast. That's a really good one. I also I don't know. Most of Pixar stuff is really good. I mean, Inside Out is the latest one we saw, and loved Inside Out. Thought it was absolutely brilliant. Frozen's really good. A different... No, but you said Disney / Pixar, so I thought it was either. So, it's your question. Did you mean it had to be just Pixar? Or it has to be Disney and Pixar, in which case we couldn't use Incredibles because that was Pixar but not Disney? Okay, so anyway, like I say, Inside Out's awesome, Finding Nemo is awesome. I mean, the original Toy Story, awesome. So I can't say for sure what my favorite is because I really, really like all of them. But let's stick with Beauty and the Beast for now. It is a classic nostalgic favorite for me. I love that movie. So there you go. 62. And this time, I'm actually watching R2. I watched the dice flip over and land in the same position. So it wasn't even like he didn't roll them. He did. They just landed in the same spot. 59. Man, he's loud today. 59 is from Kyle. Kyle asks, what pocket do you keep your wallet in and why? I keep my in my right hip pocket, so my back pocket. And why? Because it's just, I don't know. Because if it was in the front pocket, my wallet's a little bit bulky. And so therefore, if it was in a front pocket, it would just be really, really awkward. So therefore, I need it in the back pocket. And by putting it in the back pocket, I have to put it on the right because I'm right-handed. And that's what I use to reach for my wallet. There you go. Although I suppose if I wore a suit coat to work or a jacket of some sort, I could keep it inside my coat pocket. But I don't, so I can't. So there you go. 25. 25 comes from... There it is, it's from Stan. Stan says, if there were a nerdier version of rock, paper, scissors, what would replace rock, paper, and scissors? Describe the hand gestures. Oh, you make me work. Okay. If it was going to be a nerdier version of rock, paper, scissors, and obviously we can't just use the existing nerdier version, rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock, because that's too passé, and you're telling me to replace the three originals. So therefore, all right, nerdy, I got to go Dungeons & Dragons, so I'm going to, I know that two of them have to be Rust Monster and Warrior. But, see, how do you come up with a hand gesture for Rust Monster? That's the... you had to throw in hand gestures. Okay, you do the Rust Monster and the Warrior, and the Rust Monster obviously defeats the Warrior by dissolving his sword and his armor. And then, so who defeats the Rust Monster? I mean, do we go... Wizard? Druid? Except both of those could probably, depends on what level they are, they could probably kick the Warrior's ass, depending. A Pied Piper. See, there would be one. All right, see, the Pied Piper can defeat the Rust Monster, but we'll make it a Bard. There you go, Bard. And then, except obviously the Warrior can kick the Bard's ass. So there you go. The Warrior, obviously, you just have to put one finger up to represent his sword. An index finger, please, just to make this easy. The Bard, you have to do that little gesture where you're playing the world's smallest violin. That one, okay. And this rust monster, all right, you can't see this the way I've got my thumb worked through here, but clearly this is the antenna tentacles of a rust monster, and oh my god, see, this is brilliant. This is absolutely brilliant, and if you guys could see it, you would go, oh my god, it's a rust monster. I wouldn't even have to explain it to you. You would just know. But since I can't explain it to you from here, let's just say you do the to me, it's Texas. It's Hook'em Horns. I'm just putting up the index finger and the pinky finger and doing the horns there. That would be my Rust Monster. So there you go. Those are my gestures. Those are my three items. I'm getting off this question. 75. 75 takes us down to something. There it is. Hey, it's from Kyle. Kyle says, F. Mary Kill. All right. He's going to give me three options. I have to pick one for the Wild Night of Passion, one to marry, and one to kill. So, It is the scientist edition, except he misspelled edition. Don't know why I felt the need to point that out, but, you know, he is a writer. Doc Brown, Rick Sanchez from Rick and Morty, and Stephen Hawking. Ooh. All right. I have seen Rick Sanchez party, and therefore I'm going to take him for the Night of Passion. I am going to marry Stephen Hawking because I think he is funny and fascinating, and I think he would be really, really cool to hang out with. And then that leaves me just to kill Doc Brown. So that's not bad at all. I can do that one. 16. I think we'll make this our last one. Let's see. 16 is... Hey, it's from Kyle again. All right, ending with Kyle. Kyle says, replace a limb with a high-tech cyber attachment. What is it, and what can it do? Oh, and what are you replacing? Oh, that is... let me see. I am probably going... Just one limb? Because, you know, I mean, if I could replace... If I could replace my legs with, you know, cool leaping cyber legs, that would be awesome. But if I can only replace one of them, then that's less useful, because then it's all unbalanced. But let's go ahead and replace, you know, although I suppose I could go all Rose McGowan and put a machine gun on instead of my leg. But that's not really useful to me. What do I want to do? How long can I drag this out to give myself time to think? I'm going to have to replace my left arm. Going to have to. Because, you know, when you say limb, it's arms or legs, really. Although, can I just have a prehensile tail added on? I mean, really? Give me a prehensile tail? I mean, it'd be hard to, you know, find and wear appropriate pants, clothing in general. But that would be fine. I could have a prehensile tail that I could then use for all sorts of things, whether it's balance or just hanging from stuff, or use it as an extra hand to keep that thing steady while I work on it with my other two hands. Prehensile tail would really be the best way to go, but I can't really... It's not productive to replace a leg with a prehensile tail, so... and it's also counterproductive to replace an arm with a prehensile tail, so I can't do that one. All right, let's try... Yeah, I give up. I'm going to give up on this one and just say, you know what? Take my arm and give me one of those cool 3D printed arms that looks like Iron Man, or that looks like a Star Wars droid. Or have you seen them? Have you seen the cool? And they, oh, and they always have to say new 3D printed cybernetic whatever it is, and they show, you know, the fake arm for kids who have lost a limb and now their new hand is printed out, so it looks like R2-D2, or it looks like an Iron Man arm, or it looks like, and they're really cool. And here's the thing: is I'm now losing an arm. And the one I get back is not quite as functional as the one I'm giving up, but it does look cooler. And that's, although, now here's the other thing is, do they have to constantly say 3D printed for everything in the world now? I mean, at some point, can we get to the point where we just accept that this is how we manufacture most prototype things is through 3D printing? You know, because when they talk about 3D printing of biological materials, you know, throwing in the concept that they're manufacturing it through 3D printing is not useful. Like, I'm going to be able to do this at home. Like, I've got my own, you know, $2,000 3D printer at home. And, oh, if I just feed it a bunch of bacteria, why, I can use it to 3D print pizza. It's not like I'm using this for home use. You know, it's not like, and it's also not that amazing anymore. It's just a buzzword, I think. That 3D printed on everything. I don't know. I just assume that stuff is manufactured that way now. Maybe it's just me. But like I say, I see it. Every headline that can possibly include that word certainly does, because it seems to get people's attention. But you know, it's 3D printed, but in such a specialized machine that you know, it's not like you're doing this at home. That was the magic of 3D printing is that, yeah, it was expensive, but, you know, price is going to come down, and look, you can print stuff in your own house. Well, yeah, but not some of these things. Maybe I'm just complaining for nothing. You know what? I'm being overly sensitive about that. Hey, let's do one more. One more. 86. 86 is... There it is. Oh, Kyle! Told you guys he was going to dominate coming up. Kyle says, how come I don't watch much South Park anymore? Or he doesn't say much. He just says, how come I don't watch South Park anymore? When I happen to catch an episode, it seems like it's as good, if not better, than it used to be. But still, I don't watch it. What's up with that? Yeah, I don't know. Neither do I, man. But of course, I don't watch Simpsons anymore. And Simpsons is even older than that. I don't watch Simpsons. I don't watch South Park. I don't watch Family Guy or American Dad. I don't know. Got old. The shock value of stuff isn't there anymore. And while, I still find it entertaining, I still find it funny, but I also am not going out of my way to seek it out. So, I don't know. I don't know. If it's still entertaining to me, why wouldn't I be watching it? I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. I not only want entertaining, I want fresh entertainment. I can't imagine. That's not true, because then why else would I be starting in on a new season of Walking Dead here shortly? Or why would I keep, there's lots of things that I keep watching year after year after year. So I don't know. I don't know, but I don't watch it. And again, I just watched one episode like 3 weeks ago. And I can't remember why. Can't remember how it came up. But I watched one episode and I went, oh, you know what? That's not bad. That was a pretty good episode. So it entertained me, but then it's not like I went back for more. So, I don't know. There you go. That's the answer. Anyway, that is the end of the Podomatic. And so that brings us to GLaDOS, who is going to give us a recap of this week's episode. Take it away, GLaDOS.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye? And you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Weezer's In the Garage. All the songs I use on my podcast are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, you enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. You want instructions on how to make your own pocket mod? Go to pocketmod.com. Get everything you need right there. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to a friend. If you enjoy it, spread the word. Let other people enjoy it. Remember, I'm always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. So don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Pod-O-Matic. Watch every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, send it to me. Save me all that grueling research that I have to put in, and do my work for me. My contact info, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, Facebook.com/NerdPrideRadio. But to be totally honest, the very best way, as usual, to come talk to me is to sign up for my forums at NerdPrideRadio.com/forums. You sign up there, you send me a message, we will hang out together. We'll become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. So now it's time for Listener Betrayal. Before every cast, I go out to Facebook and my forums, nerdprideradio.com/forums, and I post up that I'm recording, and then anything you guys respond to that, I will read off right here on the podcast. So, what have people had to say in the last couple hours? You guys want me to start with Facebook, or you want me to start with the forums? Facebook? All right, let's do that. All right, on Facebook, the very first one, it's from Akiva. And Akiva says, have you ever been in an earthquake? I've been in two major ones. Yes, I've been in the one earthquake when I was a kid living in upstate New York, and the earthquake was far enough away. I mean, it was like a 5.6 or something like that, a 6 point. I can't remember. Anyway, but we were far enough away that, yeah, it shook the house, and my dad was on the toilet at the time, and it was pretty horrible. But we didn't break anything. We didn't lose anything. It was just a little scary, and it woke us up. So not bad. But next from Nelly. Nellie says, have you seen Misfits? I think you would enjoy it. It's kind of downhill after season one or two. The idea and season one is solid. It's effectively a British TV show about teens that society has... I've seen this! I have seen this. I watched the first several episodes and then lost track of it. I think it just fell off my radar for some reason because we were watching something else or whatever. But yeah, I've seen it and I really, really like it. But to continue... the society has written off, and they've written themselves off, too. They have all been sentenced to do community service for petty and antisocial crimes. While on community service, there's a weird occurrence and they all get superpowers. So it's about disadvantaged kids that are hooligans getting powers and trying to figure out how to use them. Interesting idea. Yeah, oh, I agree. I remember, like I say, watching the first few episodes and, you know, it's TV and it's a little, you know, it's not the professional quality of a Marvel movie or whatever like that, but it was interesting stuff and, good characters and interesting powers. And, oh man, it was a couple years ago I watched that. But, oh, now I have to go back and look up Misfits because I remember really enjoying that. And then, like I say, it just fell off my radar for some reason. But, yes, good show. Good show. I recommend. Sarah Beth says, here's just something that happened yesterday. I'm pretty sure it's hilarious, but then again, it might have been only the moment. All right. This child, who I'm guessing couldn't be more than 4, was trick-or-treating and came up to me. I popped a fun-sized Snickers in his bucket. He grabbed it back out, threw it in my face, stated, "I want a lollipop," and stormed out of my yard. I was too shocked to laugh. The parents looked mortified, but later I was cracking up. Yes. Oh my goodness. Who throws away a Snickers and asks for lollipops instead? That's ridiculous. And again, if I was that kid's parents, because I've been the parent of the naughty kid, on some occasions, not 90% of the time. No. And it is absolutely mortifying when your kid does something just blatantly disrespectful. Not even typical rude little kid stuff, but just over the top, like rejecting free candy because it's not the candy you wanted. That's ridiculous. Oh, that's crazy. Yes. Yeah. Again, when it comes to being the parent of the naughty child and you go to pick them up at daycare, I would much rather be the parent of the bite-e than the bite-er, all right? Because I've been on both ends of that, where my kid was biting someone else at daycare, and you have to come in, you have to feel mortified, and you have to apologize, and we're so sorry, and then you feel terrible about it. And then, you know, a few years later, different kids, different situation, and we go pick them up at daycare, and they have to apologize. Oh, well, he got bit today. Well, yeah, okay, whatever, he's fine. I mean, we don't care. Yeah. I mean, yes, that's terrible. It shouldn't happen. I'm certainly glad that those parents are doing something about that. But whatever. It's not, you know, he's not going to die. You rough and tumble, you mix it up. He gets worse from his brothers. It'll be fine. Ah, come on. He's a 4th kid. What's going to happen? Right? So, anyway, Akiva then, goes on with another one that says, are my contributions to listener betrayal as good as Nellie's and Sarah Beth's? And then he comments on his own post to say, it's okay, you can tell me the truth. And then he posts again to say, he sniff, sometimes I don't know why I bother. You know what? I love all of you equally. Yeah, it's true. I can't pick a favorite. Which, by the way, while you do love all your children equally, and I do love all of my children equally, I have 4 of them, but you always have a favorite. There's always one that you like better than the other ones because, you know what? Sometimes they're assholes. And sometimes a kid will go through a phase where he's an asshole for a good 6 months and you don't like that one, but the other ones are being so nice and so good right now and they're working so hard. And your favorite shifts constantly through their lives, all right? Every single one of my children has been my favorite at some point and also been completely on my shit list at other points. Because that's just how it is with people. That's just, there's ups and downs. And I love all of them equally, and I wouldn't trade them for anything. My kids are awesome. But you know what? They all have their favorites. They all have their moments, and therefore, yeah, occasionally you like one better than the other. There's one that is more pleasant to spend time with than the others. That's just how it goes. But you know, you just don't let that affect how you treat them. You always try and treat them all fairly, and you love them all equally. And once you start playing favorites, yeah, that's when you're going to mess your kids up, and that's where things go wrong. But you know what? Completely natural to have. Oh, so now this would okay. I understand what I've just done now. Akiva has posed this question, and I've said I love you all equally. And then I compare it to my children where I say, yeah, but you play favorites. And so Akiva is now going to ask me, I already see it coming, so let me get ahead of you on this. He's going to say, okay, yeah, you love us all equally, but whose posts do you like better? Just stop doing that. That's not fair to anybody, Akiva. I can't, well, you know, seriously, if secretly you are my favorite, can I say that and risk hurting somebody else's feelings? I can't do that. You know what? Tell you what, I'll send you a private message and let you know there. All right? How's that? Which I'll just give away my secret. All of my kids, and they all figured it out eventually. But all of my kids, when they're with you, you whisper to them and go, you know, don't tell the other ones, but secretly you've always been my favorite. And of course, eventually they figure that out and they go, yeah, that's what you tell them when I'm not around. Well, all right, maybe. But yeah, now, yes. And as Lisa says, but I mean it every time I say it. Now, my dad as a boss, he had a bunch of people working for him when he was working for the labor department in state of Texas. And he would tell his employees that. He would take them aside, and when he had, you know, private conversations with them, he'd get done with whatever, and as they're on their way out the door, he'd go, hey, don't tell the others, but, you know, secretly, you've always been my favorite. I appreciate it. And he said, one of them finally figured out that, oh, he tells that to everybody. And it was like this heartbreaking moment of, oh, I'm not really his favorite. Oh, he says that to everyone? Yeah, so there you go. But my dad used that as a tactic with his employees. And yeah, so they were sharing in the break room or whatever, and they had a whole conversation about it, and that's when the other one realized, oh. And it turns out, yeah, they all have to go through that heartbreaking moment of realizing that, oh, he says that to all of us. I get it now. So anyway, let's move on to Nelly again. Also, you should totally read Bitch Planet. It's a coming book series. Each issue is short and sweet, and is currently making me cry while reading it. Everything in that comic is something that I have had to deal with, and am currently still dealing with. All women are. It hits on some deep feminism and patriarchal issues. You can get it on smart devices on Comixology. It would make me so happy to get your opinions on it. Okay, I'll take a look at it. I have heard of Bitch Planet. I don't remember what I've heard about it, but I've never seen anything but glowing recommendations for it. So it's supposed to be good. I've heard the same thing that you're telling me right now. So I will put it on my list, and sometime after I read my brother's book, I will get right on that. So there we go. And then done. All right, that's it for Facebook. Wow, you guys did a lot. This is what happens when I record early in the day and people are awake, as I get lots and lots of feedback. You guys are awesome. Let's go to my forums. And where are my forums? I guess I don't have any forums. Let's try that. There we go. All right. From my forums, Stan says, how awesome is Kyle for showing us how entertaining office work is? Oh, yeah. No, I did a whole bit on that in the gaming section. So, yeah, I'm right there with you. This is my brother running the office horror online game bit, and it is really, really cool. Let's see. Talvin says, sorry, I've been on self-imposed exile from listener betrayal for a couple episodes because of my Roman numeral foul-up. So, yeah, well, I hope you've learned a lesson. You know, I don't remember telling you you'd come back, but I suppose it's time. You've suffered enough. So, have I said recently how awesome DM Darks is? No, you haven't, but he is. He says, I am loving the hillbilly ogres. Yeah, no kidding. Mama flying around the room, dressed in curtains. Oh, horrifying. When the whole scene with the ogres, the ogre kin, yeah, absolute stereotypical hillbilly style. And they are, they're disgusting. We walk into what I assume is the kitchen, and it's severed human body parts in baskets, and there's flies, and there's bugs, and there's, it's just gross. And then we finally get in, and all the ones that were fighting keep yelling for their mama. And when we finally get to mama, mama is huge. She is so fat she can't even get out of the bed. Wait, until she starts flying, because apparently she has magic. Just terrifying. And then we killed her. So, you know, that's how it goes. Talvin then says, if you could live anywhere in the world, where would you live? Oh, right here. I'm already doing it. I'm good. I'm in Nebraska. I'm happy. After the kids get out of the house and it's just us, it'll be probably whatever gives me the closest access to my kids. That would be, because my kids, my grandkids, I love my family. I don't have any grandkids yet, but I'm saying eventually by that point I will, and I'll want to be there for them. So I'm hoping they don't spread out too much, but you know, hey, they're going to make their own way in the world. They're going to go somewhere. at least one or two of my kids is going to move away at some point. But, you know, we'll work it out. I hope I have the ability to travel to see them on a regular basis because I love my kids. So, so how did you and your wife meet? This is also Talvin. We were both waiting tables at the same restaurant, Perkins, on 48th and O Street in Lincoln, Nebraska, if you've ever been to Lincoln. That Perkins is still there. And we were waiting tables. She was hired 3 months before I was, something like that. And the first night that I, because I went through training, and then as soon as I was done with my training, the first weekend that I worked, where you do the overnight shift on the weekend, because Perkins is a 24-hour restaurant, or at least it is in Lincoln. I don't know if it's 24 hours everywhere. And the first overnight shift that I worked, she was on that shift, and we usually have 7 or 8 wait staff that work overnight. And I swear to you, this I saw her, and I decided she was the most beautiful waitress working, and I decided I absolutely wanted to spend more time with her, and I wanted to ask her out. They were not. You big liar. She's trying to claim that it was all men. It was not. In fact, it was more than half were women. It was majority female. All right? Yes, the kitchen staff were all men, but among the front staff, the waitresses, the hostesses, waiters, the servers, that was the word I was looking for, servers and hosts, that was majority female, and you were the prettiest of all of them. And that's why I decided I had to date you. And it turns out that she's a nice person. So how about that? But that's how we met. Let me see. Next question is also from Talvin. You have to sing. So fine. I wish I had Jacob here because this is Jacob's song. But never going to give you up. Never going to let you down. Never going to run around and desert you. Never going to make you cry. Never going to say goodbye. Never going to tell a lie and hurt you. Yeah, see, this is why you're so glad that we don't have the mics on for our gaming and having me singing all of these live. All right? Because my bard sings every single game a lot. But now I've been Rickrolled. All right. Talvin then says, okay, we know your thoughts on what makes a modern version of the modern Major General. What knowledge and skills would be required for a modern Renaissance man or woman? Oh, that is tough. Because, I mean, Renaissance man, you really just have to be, you have to be educated in all sorts of fields. I don't even know if it's possible because, nowadays, if you know a little bit about everything, but you're not an expert in any of it, it's not good enough to get you by anymore. Because, I mean, nowadays, you can get the knowledge of the Renaissance people of the past just by going to Wikipedia and Google, and you can pull up everything you need to look like you know a little bit about everything. So I don't know what knowledge is required. Like I say, it's being able to know a little bit about everything, but there's now so much you could possibly know, and your access to knowledge keeps growing. Someone's calling me. All right, moving on. Talvin then asks, have you watched the Con Man series from Alan Tudyk and Nathan Fillion? Oh, man. It's like we're psychic, man. I was just talking about these guys. I have not watched Con Man. I've seen the first episode. And it for those of you who don't know, Con Man is them. It is two guys who used to be in a popular science fiction TV series together, and now they've moved on from it, but the one of them keeps feeling like he's being typecast and he's stuck with this old role while the other one's moved on and become more dynamic. And so the Alan Tudyk role, the one who is a little more bitter and resentful, if I remember this correctly, I probably have a lot of the details wrong. But anyway, he wants to move on to a new project. But to make this project happen, he needs his old partner, played by Nathan Fillion, to get in on it with him and make this go. And I don't know what the whole thing is, but the two of them together, I'm in. And this is all Alan Tudyk's baby, and I love the guy. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of it. I only watched the first half of the first episode. I saw something about it somewhere, and so I started watching it, and I realized, oh, I don't have time for this because I have something I actually need to be working on. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. So that one's going to be cool. And then, let's see, next up is, oh, it's Lucy. How awesome are Kyle and DM Darks? super awesome. Lucy then says, is Aggie an innocent and misunderstood new employee, part of a twisted plot, or pure evil? Aggie being the new, or in the office game, we're all playing office employees in our cubicles with our little office politics and snarky stuff going on. And then Aggie is the new employee who shows up, and there's something a little bit weird about her, but we're not sure. And now, I kind of fell asleep for a while, but it looks like she's been attacked, and she was in the ladies' room, and now she's bleeding, and her face is torn open, her jaw is broken. It's horror movie stuff. And it's bad, but we're getting these weird messages and her voice coming over the PA system, and I think it's her. I think she is possessed. I think she is evil. I think it's her. And at this point, I am wielding a stapler, and I am, if I had a good excuse for it, I would go barging over there, and I would just try and beat her body to death with the stapler, which I assume would result in my own death, but I'm okay with that. I don't think Aggie's up to any good at all. That's my personal opinion. But let's see. Then Lucy says, what's in the barn? Oh, dear God, I don't know. I mean, we just went through and killed all the ogres, ogre kin, and we killed Mama, and I think they're all dead. But you know what? This house we're in still has an attic, and it still has a basement, and it still has a barn. I mean, if this is what we get from the house, what horrors are going to await us over there? I'm assuming over there we're going to find the actual slaughterhouse portion is going to be at least part of the barn. I assume it's going to be some kind of slaughterhouse for the people beings that they capture and then cut up for their dinner. I think what we saw in the kitchen was just the leavens. I don't think that's where they do the real work, but it might be. So I think we may see some of the rangers that were coming out here to save. I think we're going to find their bodies strung up in the barn. It's like some kind of disgusting meat locker over there. That's what I'm thinking. But I don't know. Could be anything. Hey, and then there's me saying done. So that one's finished. But in the meantime, my wife has added that I need to tell the story of Frankie. So I'll tell that one. And then I also need to tell an Ian McKellen story. So I'll tell that one. But first we'll start with Frankie. Some of you know Frankie. She's a friend of ours, used to be on the old forums, hasn't made the full transition over to the new forums, and that's fine. But she is our Facebook friend, and she is really funny. And so she was out on Facebook, and she posted, here it is. This is her Halloween post. Frankie says, "We are hostages in our own home. All the lights are off. We can't even cook dinner. Look, kid, I know you want candy. I want candy, too. That's why I have a job. I was good as a child because when my parents asked what I wanted, I said candy. And they went, she's been good, and gave me candy. Just because you can't understand social norms and know when the porch light is off we are not giving out candy does not mean I should have to eat dinner at 10 o'clock at night because I am cowering in the dark." End rant. Those were her words. End rant. All right. And then we had a comment from one of our friends, who is also a member of our forums, who says, "Well, maybe hand out candy like a normie." And then Frankie responds, "Yeah, I bought candy, smartass. We just ate it before the damn kids got here." Funniest thing I've ever heard. I thought that was great. And in fact, we showed that to our son Jacob, who thought it was so funny. He's like, "Oh, I have to be able to post that on Reddit. Please let me post that on Reddit." We're like, "All right, we'll ask her permission." Frankie says, "Yeah, you don't even have to blank out the names. I don't care. Go ahead. That's funny." And so he did, and it's getting all sorts of upvotes, and he's very happy about that. So anyway, that's Frankie. Okay. Now, the other story is, was it Graham Norton's show? It was Graham Norton. And Graham Norton has Tom Hiddleston on and Kenneth Branagh and some British person I don't recognize, and they're talking about doing impressions because this has become Tom Hiddleston's go-to thing for interviewers. Is everyone's heard that he does impressions, and so therefore they ask him questions about it until they can get him to do impressions because that always makes good TV, and so that's what they do to him. And so then they switch over to Kenneth Branagh, who then does his Ian McKellen as Gandalf impression, and it is a terrible impression, but it's all right. It's good enough. And then Graham Norton tells a story. He says, "Okay, I don't do impressions. I don't do an Ian McKellen impression, but I was at my local grocery, and while I'm in there, Ian McKellen was also shopping there. And yeah, apparently Graham has interviewed Ian McKellen before. It's not like they're friends or anything, but they know each other. And so he said, you know, we saw each other at the back of the store. We said hi, and that was fine. And then up at the front, they have the self-checkout, and I'm on my way up there, and I can't see it yet, but I'm on my way to the self-checkout machines, and from over the machines, all I hear is Ian McKellen's huge booming voice coming from self-checkout going, "It's already in the bag!" All right, see, that's the whole story. And, yeah, see, Lisa's over there laughing already. I love that story. The idea that, I mean, again, we're laughing at someone else's frustrations, but we've all been there. And you know, you don't have to know what's going on over there because just from those words, it's already in the bag. You know exactly what's happened to poor Sir Ian McKellen. Gandalf the Wizard is being lectured to by a self-service checkout machine. And that to me is very, very funny. Anyway, that is the end of this podcast. So, I appreciate you guys coming around here. Thank you so much for everything, guys. You've been really, really awesome to me. I keep getting good feedback from you guys. You guys, this listener betrayal just killed it. You guys are great. New Podomatics are in. And you guys appreciate what I do, and I appreciate you being there for me. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Say goodnight, R2. Say goodnight, Lisa. See you next week, guys.